Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Well, Frank, not exactly as an eventful SmackDown as last week's was, but we did get fallout from last week. We'll get to the main event segment in a minute because I want to talk Solo Sikoa versus Sheamus in the main event. I thought it was a solid little SmackDown TV match. But let's start with a conversation about the follow-up to last week's big, you know, the bloodline breaks down angle. I thought WWE did a nice job at the start of the show with a, you know, like they usually do with video packages, like recapping the entire angle from last week, but and not just the angle itself, but the history of the bloodline too, and just made the everything that went down between Jay, Jimmy, Roman, and Solo last week feel like a really big deal. And then the show kicks off with the Usos, which I also thought was a nice move to just bookend last week's show with the biggest thing going on and this week's show, the follow-up on that. I went into this week's show, though, Frank, mm-hmm. with high expectations as to how Jay and Jimmy were going to talk about last week and how they were going to frame turning on the bloodline and how Jay in particular was going to frame his indecision of sticking with Jimmy or sticking with Roman and Solo. And I got to say, I don't think it was a bad promo. I thought it had some highs, but I don't know that it hit on all cylinders like I had hoped it would coming out of the piece of business they did last week. So I won't leave the question too much more than that, but what did you think of the follow-up, Frank, from last week to this week?
Yeah, it was missing a little bit for me coming out of last week, Zach. I mean, one of the questions that I had, well, the major question that I had was, what was Jay thinking? You know, did he know all along that that's what Roman was going to say, you know, bring up the whole thing with Jimmy? Did, you know, he and Jimmy know about it? And they just played along and they figured, okay, you know, he's going to bring this up tonight. You know, I've got to make my decision. This is where he's going. You know, did they have everything worked out? I don't know, you know. And they really didn't. I think they kind of danced around it a little bit when they talked about the whole thing with respect, how they talked about how Roman and Paul, you know, disrespected them, you know, and, you know, their family was raised on respect and all of that. That they discussed at the outset of the show. So I think that was their way of trying to address it, but they really didn't, you know. And I don't know if they just didn't know how. I don't know if WWE thought, you know, this is maybe just a little too complicated. We're not even going to try. You know, we'll just do something generic, because that's what it felt like. It felt very generic, you know. It felt very plain. And we'll just, you know, move forward, because, you know, this bloodline story is a hot story. And people, you know, people do want to see the match next week. People do want to see the Civil War. So I don't think it really matters, you know, but, you know, for people that want to understand the story and for people that, you know, don't want to detach themselves from the story, you want to kind of understand. Because I'll tell you this, and, you know, and I know I'm bringing up last week and we're here to discuss this week, but I was on board with that whole thing. I was on board with the whole thing with Jimmy. I thought it was a good deal, and then they just swerve you at the end, you know? And I needed to understand what happened, because I couldn't – I was sitting there talking to my wife last week trying to figure out, why did Jay do that? You know, what was, you know, what was the reasoning? And I laid out some of my discussion points earlier. So that's what
so
I was –
that was –
yeah, go ahead.
No, that was my, I mean, you are in the same lane I am as why I thought it was a weak follow-up. Like, I think the Usos together in this storyline bring it from a personality perspective. I think they bring it from a character perspective. They've got the audience on their side, mm-hmm. you know, and their intensity was good today. I thought the delivery was fine too. But, I mean, there were mm-hmm. some major holes that just weren't addressed that I thought really needed to be. I mean, and mm-hmm. the major one that stood out to me was, you know, last week, Jimmy admitted to essentially holding Jay back in terms
right.
of being a star and being kind of the next, whatever, the next tribal chief or being groomed. And Jay just kind of skipped over that this
right.
week. And I thought you could have gotten some mileage out of that tonight with Jay
right.
just addressing Jimmy. I'm on your side here. We're brothers and we're together and we're in this thing. But, you know, I'm going to set you straight in regards to what happened last week. And instead he kind of just dodged it. Like they didn't even, it's almost like
right.
that didn't happen. The other thing that kind of stood out to me on this was the back and forth. I talked on the Fireside Chat today, actually with Tyler Sage on our YouTube channel. We're live every Friday afternoon. I talked about the fact that like I took last week's kind of swerve as, you know, more so WWE show business than like an actual part of like the angle itself. Like they, WWE wanted to create a surprise. They wanted to create that moment, that
mm-hmm.
line that Jay could hit for better or worse, by the way. I'm not arguing like whether that's the way they should go or not, but that's what they did. But man, you know, If you don't address those things that led up to his indecision, you're leaving part of the story behind. And
right.
I think you're right to call out that this is not going to be something that, you know, breaks the Bloodline story. I don't think it's going to create any less interest in the Civil War match going down at Money in the Bank. But, you know, it's worth pointing out that, you know, I think there's growing sentiment that, hey, you know, Jay Ken should be the guy to beat Roman. And when I watch a promo like tonight, I'm like, I just, you know, he has certain aspects of it down, but there are also some holes that, and they're not all on him to fill, but you,
yeah.
it makes you think a little bit like how far can this thing go? And again, it's one of those things that it's sometimes hard to break down because it's like everything Bloodline the last, 12 months at least has been
right.
very crisp and so good that it's, you know, maybe it is a little bit nitpicking, but I think, you know, you got to call a spade and there's money left on the table tonight and they didn't take advantage of it.
Well, and you bring up a good point, you know, with the Bloodline that everything has been so good for a long period of time. So I think automatically, you know, a lot of people will just say, oh yeah, you know, it's fine. You know, like whatever they did tonight, that's cool. You know, we're getting the match next week, you know, so, and it'll be great. So, you know, it's all good, you know, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's not really all that good. You know, it's, you know, I was down, you know, as I mentioned before, I was down on the story last week and coming into tonight, and I was hoping to get that explanation. You know, why did Jay just change his mind so quickly like that? I mean, a major story was brought up that Jimmy had been holding him back for so long, and that question was not answered, you know? And the other thing, too, Todd brought this up on The Fix, what's Jay's issue with Paul Heyman? You know, everything has been hunky-dory for such a long period of time, and now all of a sudden he wants Heyman out, you know, so that he could be in. Why? What's the deal there? Like, there's all these things that aren't getting explained. And, you know, and I think you hit on something. You hit on something when you said the moment, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I think last week people got that moment. They got that super kick. And then they got the double super kick. So it was, I mean, you saw it. The live crowd ate it up. They loved it. So because they got their moment, everything is fine. And because we're getting the match next week, they think that everything is fine. And you know what? I mean, we'll see what the viewership is like tonight, Zach, you know, and we'll see what it is next week. I'm sure it's not going to make a difference. But, you know, yeah, I would have liked them to expand on, you know, what took place. Why, you know, what was that a lie that Roman told? You know, was that
right,
look crap? Like, that's a major, major part of the story that you're just leaving out. So, yeah, I mean, maybe they'll do it next week with Roman there. You know, maybe they'll expand on it, you know, when he shows up next week. But we'll just have to see.
Yeah, we'll see. The other thing that stood out to me on it was just, and it's not like you can forget this, really, but I think, you know, just how strong these Bloodline story segments are when Roman is here. Like, it just shows, like, the level he's on in terms of just star power and holding everything together. And it's not by any means a knock on Jimmy and Jay. I mean, they've been wonderful in this story too. But, you know, you Roman Reigns gives both of them and Solo and Paul Heyman such a element to play off of in the ring that when it's not there, it's, you know, it's almost like you're swimming upstream a little bit if you're Jimmy and Jay, because it's hard to reach the levels of a product and performance with Roman than without him. And that stood out to me tonight too.
The show feels very empty without Roman there. I'll give you that. The show feels a lot different, you know, when he's there, it feels like a big deal. And when he's not, you feel his absence. I totally agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk about the rest of the show all throughout the night. This is, as I said, I want to get to the main event. We have a unified women's tag team champions, return of Liv Morgan, more from LA Knight, and a lot of other things too. Not a super newsworthy show, Frank, but enough topics for us to dig into. Let's set the table though here real quick. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post show covering WWE SmackDown for Friday, June 23rd, 2023. I'm PW Torch assistant editor Zach Hador, tagging in for Wade tonight. Wade's out on assignment. And with me is PWTorch.com contributor and host of Then and Now, the VIP podcast for Pro Wrestling Torch VIP members, Frank Pediani. Frank, man, it's been a while since we cracked a mic here. It's great to have you on the show. What's going on?
Oh, not too much. It has been a minute since you and I have worked together on one of these post shows. And, you know, it feels a little different having met you in person at WrestleMania. You know, it adds an element to the friendship, you know. So
yep.
I'm glad to, you know, glad to have had that happen. And most importantly, glad to talk to you tonight.
Absolutely, to the best Bud Lights I've had in a long time. We're sharing with you, Frank.
Oh, that was great. Good stuff, man.
Frank, before we get into things here and grab some callers, you just dropped an episode of your podcast for VIP members on the PW Torch VIP feed. Talk about your show in general and what the topic was on this month's show.
Absolutely. So longtime Torch VIP listener and reader Kylan Furlow joined me, and we looked back on the 1998 King of the Ring, which featured probably one of the most famous bumps in the history of the WWF when The Undertaker threw Mankind off the top of Hell in a Cell. So we got to cover that along with Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Kane in a First Blood match and all else that came with King of the Ring 98. So it was really fun. Kylan's been on the show with me before. He had some really good insight, and it was great to talk to him. We went about 2 hours, and pretty much on Pro Wrestling Then and Now, I'll stick in usually the 20, 25, or 30-year look back. This year, mostly, it's been 1998 WWF. I've enjoyed going back and just seeing how that year progressed. Prior to this show, I dipped back into 1993 WCW with Christopher Maitland over from the PW Torch Daily Cast. We looked at 93 WCW Slammarie, and kind of a dire period for WCW, but it was interesting just to kind of see the beginning stages of that company, just knowing what it became. So it was good to talk to him. So, yeah. Check out that show, Pro Wrestling Then and Now. I usually try to do one a month, depending on my schedule. Sometimes I'll do a few. And, I do that along with the WWE Premium Live Event Hits and Misses Report. So the next one will be dropping after Money in the Bank next week. So check that out.
Very good. PWTorch.com/goVIP to hear and read all about Torch VIP membership. You get an ad-free version of the website, ads and plugs removed from these shows, as well as just access to just a multitude of different podcasts covering all sorts of different areas of professional wrestling. And now's just a great time to be doing that. Forbidden Door coming up on Sunday. We'll have coverage there. Money in the Bank. And then a busy summer with SummerSlam and All In and All Out and everything in between. It's pwtorch.com/goVIP. All right. Frank, let's open up the phone lines here. If you want to give us a call, the number is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. We already have a couple folks in the queue that have raised their hand that want to get on. If you call in, make sure to press 1 to let me know that that you want to get on the air. If you want to send us an email, it's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll get to emails throughout the show. It's, again, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. So with that said, let's go to 646. 646, thanks for calling. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Joe from New York.
Joe, good to hear from you, Joe. What did you think of SmackDown?
Oh, I thought the show sucked. It was a two segment show. The opening segment and the main event. Everything else sucked. I mean, it was bad. It was flat. It was bad. But let me start off with the good stuff. I mean, the Usos, they sounded like wrestlers, which I like. They didn't sound like somebody just reading a script or a memorized script. They sounded like professional wrestlers, which was a good thing, and they had a message. And they ended the show good, too. Now, let's talk about what's really bad, though. I mean, Pretty Deadly, you let them start the second hour. They were on the TV screen from 8:55 to 9:15. And all that just to set up a match with the Street Profits? That's a waste of airtime.
Yeah. So, Frank, what do you make of Pretty Deadly? I know you were a casual viewer of NXT 2.0. I don't know how much you dabbled in NXT UK when that show existed. I'm a lot higher on Pretty Deadly than you seem to be, Joe. They were building to a match with the Street Profits, yes, but they also have a major pay-per-view match against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn coming up at Money in the Bank for the tag titles. And so I think they were also out there for that. Frank, I get, you know, it depends on, like, how you feel, I think, about heel acts in WWE. Because in some ways, you know, this is like, I think you could make the argument it's like tag team version of The Miz or of Grayson Waller for that matter. But mm-hmm. I get a kick out of the act. I think they're obnoxious. I think they're all in on it and aren't, you know, necessarily playing the part. But I feel like if you go to a Jewel for some groceries and you saw them there, like that's what they'd look like and that's what they would sound like. And so I think that there's an authenticity there. And I know, you know, it's not for everyone. Like, I don't think you could stick that act in, you know, in GCW or in New Japan and have it work the same. But, man, right. WWE, where you're looking to kick out content and be able to do backstage vignettes that have some comedy in it, that have good, you can have good matches. I mean, they really are kind of a jack-of-all-trades tag team. So I am higher on that. I can see why they get the TV time they do, Frank. But break the tie here between Joe and I. Where are you at with Pretty Deadly, and what did you think of the segment tonight?
No, I'm more with you. I thought the segment went a little long with the Grayson Waller effect, and that is a growing problem with that show. The last couple of – I'm forgetting which one it was that went long. I think it was one maybe it was one with the women a few weeks ago. Anyway, there was one that there were a lot of complaints about it, but that did go a bit long. But the one thing I did note about Pretty Deadly is they're able to, you know, do their little thing. They're able to do their shtick, but they're also serious too. Like they talked about, you know, what going after the tag team gold meant. And I like that. You know, I like when you can kind of bounce from, you know, especially if you're a comedic type of team and that's what they are. If you could go from that side and then show that serious side in the same promo, I do appreciate that. So I like their act. I do see why they get the TV time. The thing about the match, and I assume you want me to weigh in on that, the Street Profits haven't exactly been protected that much lately, so I don't know why you needed to do I'd call it a crap finish. I mean, the feet on the ropes, and the referee not seeing it, that's a crap finish. I mean, you could just put somebody over, you know, and
right.
having them win that match didn't do anything to make me want to see them go after the tag titles. It's, you know, the same thing that we see in WWE week in and week out, where we see garbage finishes and, you know, nothing is resolved between the two sides and nobody really gets over, you know. And especially when you have a team like the Street Profits, who, as I said before, have not been protected that much lately. So you could have put Pretty Deadly over, and that makes them feel more like a threat going into the tag match next week, you know, than they do now. I mean, again, not a big deal, but, you know, that's what I would have liked to see. But I'm a little more favorable on the act than you, Joe.
That makes sense. Like, the Street Profits just have – I mean, you're so right on that. I mean, these guys, Pretty Deadly, are going, you know, to a big show and – you know, going against two WrestleMania main eventers, you know? I mean, like, Street Profits, even if they are protected act, it's like Pretty Deadly is the priority right now, without right. question. Whether you like the act or not, like, them being in that match make them the priority. And so, yeah, I think you're good to call out the booking there, Frank, in that, like, hey, give these guys a W. Give them a clean W so they head into next week, you know, as strong as possible opposite Sammy and KO. Hey, Joe, back to you for any follow-up comments or a different topic or question altogether.
A different topic now. One thing, though, the crowd did stink tonight. I never heard the crowd. They were dead. They would any match, even in the main event, they were somewhat loud, but not really. You didn't hear the crowd all night. But let's talk about Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler. Are there any colder acts in wrestling than those two right now? I mean, man, what happened to Ronda Rousey? I mean, she is just not a non-factor in this business. I mean, it's sad. If I was Endeavor, I'd be thinking about cutting her because she doesn't bring anything to the table right now.
Yeah, I had to sit here and eat my words a little bit. From a couple weeks ago, I was on the show with Nick Barbati, and we were talking about this match, the unification match. And I at the time, I was higher on the segment that they had with Isla Dawn and Alba Fire and, you know, Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler in the ring, because I was like, hey, look, they're giving the WWE Women's Tag Division some time to build a match and some time to tell a story. And then the weeks went by, Frank, and we didn't hear anything from anybody last week, and Ronda right. kind of does her thing, Shayna does her thing, and then tonight you have a match that's in the second slot with not a lot of build or hype even on the show. You know, you didn't hear much, if at all, from any of the women, you know, competing in this match, and when you look at that, I think it's just a mistake for a company that needs all this content week in and week out. It's like, just, you know, you can get away with, you know, main eventing a Raw or SmackDown with a women's tag title match if the division is paid attention to and if it's right. built the right way. And while those titles were around the waist of Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler, my initial thought was, okay, you know, this gives you the opportunity to do that because you've got Ronda there. And, you know, she can try to elevate these titles and doesn't have to be responsible for carrying a singles match or a singles feud. And she plays off Shayna Baszler pretty well. And then it just goes cold. And we don't see or hear from her in a couple weeks. And now she has a title match. And, you know, they win the unified tag team titles. But it's crazy to see her, you know, as the anchor for a division that's just getting no attention. Even when you're unifying the titles, there's not a priority there to feature Ronda Rousey, really, because, you know, look, she's on top of the tag division. And it's wild to see her in that spot. I'd be less surprised if she was, you know, tag team champions with Shayna Baszler and they were treated as a big deal because she is still Ronda Rousey and you're not even getting that here. So it either tells you something about Ronda Rousey and how the company feels about her or just like the lack of want to put the women's tag titles in any sort of position to mean something. I thought the match tonight was okay, nothing special. Isla Dawn and Alba Fire have a ways to go, you know, in terms of, you know, being main roster talents. And it just was all in all, you know, like a disappointing night for something that I think just given a little bit of attention could have meant a heck of a lot more, Frank.
Yeah, and, you know, I was about to say Kaylee Ray, but Alba Fire.
How dare you?
yeah, I know. Alba Fire and Isla Dawn are an interesting act. I mean, they could be an act that could be a centerpiece of that division, you know, individually at some point. They could be key components to the women's division. But, yeah, there's just been a lack of attention on a lot of the women, and there's been a lack of attention to those tag titles. I mean, since they came into existence, what, 4 or 5 years ago, you know, basically the way I've seen the championships is they're just basically put on somebody for convenience. You know, hey, we want to keep you relevant. Let's give them the tag team titles. Hey, we need to boost these two up. Let's give them the tag team titles. We got nothing for you to do. Let's give them that's really what it's been like. So I do put a lot of the coldness of the act, as Joe brings up, I do put a lot of that on the company because a lot of emphasis is not put on those titles. And I mean, I don't recall in the last few weeks any, you know, vignettes, any interviews, any discussion about what winning those champions. I mean, you're unifying titles, Zach. You're unifying titles on your major show. And you said nothing about it. You said zero, you know? I mean, how long did we hear about unifying the WWE Championship? I mean, of course, that's a bigger deal, but you know, how long did we hear about that? How long did we hear about unifying the tag, the men's tag team titles a year ago, a year and a half ago, whatever it was? So, yeah, it just goes to show you how much those titles meant. I mean, as far as Ronda and Shayna themselves, I mean, I am in favor of them being together. I have no problem with them being together, and I think that, you know, they could do more, but I don't know. It would be a good situation to investigate to see, you know, how do they feel about those women, you know, especially with Triple H more at the forefront over the past year. You would think that Shayna would be in a better position considering how she was framed when she was in NXT under his guise many years ago. So, yeah, I don't know. I put some on them, but I think I put more on the company in this case for how cold Ronda and Shayna are.
Yeah, Frank, what do you make of – go ahead, Joe. Go ahead.
Rousey's been this book since she signed with the company. I mean, she should have been treated like Brock Lesnar. She should have been booked like a killer. She should have had Heyman as a mouthpiece, and that solved the promo problem. And she should have been winning matches in 5 and 7 minutes. We should be – Ronda Rousey, because of her legitimacy when she first came in the company, should have been tapping people out in like three to five minutes. And you should be able to count. You should be able to count her losses on two hands in the last 7 years. She gets 60-40 booked the other way, not wins, the losses. That's why she doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, Frank, like, what do you make of Ronda? Not even necessarily within the tag team, but just her position in the company right now. Like, after being such a big deal back in, you know, 2018 into 2019, she had the thing with Becky and first women main event at WrestleMania. I mean, there's a lot of good that happened on that in that first run, I think.
Sure.
But, man, it's been a polar opposite you know, in this second run. And you know, the matches aren't there, the promo's not there, the focus on her isn't there. And I mean, she's more like, you know, more like a Liv Morgan at this point than she is a Becky Lynch or a Charlotte Flair. I mean, it's been quite a fall for her.
Liv Morgan is more over than her, you know, since you brought up Liv.
Right.
Yeah. To Joe's point, I think he brings something up that's interesting in that, you know, treating her like a Brock Lesnar type and things like that. Now, she has won a lot of matches very quickly. I'd have to really kind of go over her history in the past year and a half to see if there's anything that's gone ridiculously long. I can't recall, maybe the WrestleMania match with Charlotte. But, you know, they've basically merged her into traffic, you know. And, I mean, if you treated her more like somebody who showed up, you know, every 2 months, every 3 months and had big matches, she might stand out more. But, you know, she's just kind of merged into the everyday, in the everyday swing of things. And that's not Ronda's effectiveness. I mean, we even started to see in the first run, back, we saw when she was appearing on TV so much, her star was kind of falling a little bit, you know? So,
I think it's less
is more might be the better approach with her. But, you know, unfortunately, we are dealing with Fox. You know, they want her on TV. They want the name, you know. So there might be something with that, too. I mean, we got to think about the business side of this, you know, besides the booking as well.
For sure. I mean, yeah, Ron is going to be a really interesting, you know, case study when things are done, because like she's almost like a victim of her own star power in some ways, because you know, look, if she came on board and wanted to, you know, be a bit, you know, she clearly I think wanted to be a babyface, like at least at the beginning for sure, and you know, to offset a potential negative reaction, she had to like do the anti-Brock Lesnar of, oh no, I'm in this, I'm in it, and I'm going to be here every week, you know, to kind of, you know, just get her in the good graces of fans who kind of dispelled the part-timer thing. And she couldn't, like, they just decided to take a direction with her that was not going to be the part-time thing in favor of her going all in on being a wrestler. And I think, you know, while that was, you know, while that has its pros, like the con of that is you do fall into the lane of traffic. I mean, there's so much content for WWE that, you know, there's only a handful of people that stand out, you know, like, you know, Roman, Brock,
right.
Edge, you know, but like, you know, everyone else, like it's really hard to break away. And I think Ronda did for a while, but once she came back and once kind of, I think the intrigue of her performances wore off a bit, and you saw the Ronda Rousey match, you know, many, many times over, like it just wasn't appointment viewing like it used to be.
Let me jump in, Zach.
Go ahead.
One thing I want to say, all right, there is a way that you could have somebody on TV frequently and not burn them out. Like, I think they're doing a pretty good job with Cody. Okay, I have to say,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's not wrestling all the time. He's wrestling enough, you know, and he's appearing enough that his appearances and his matches matter. They're doing it with Roman, you know, and even when Brock was appearing frequently in recent times, you know, when he was appearing on TV almost every week, he felt special. So there is a way to do it. You know, it's just a matter of how you present the character and how I don't know if they're afraid of her promo ability, because I know that that's always in question a little bit. You know, maybe it's on her too, who knows? But there's a way to make it work, and they just don't seem to be hitting the right notes with Ronda, and they haven't for a long time.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens here as she's, you know, undisputed unified tag team champion with Shayna Baszler. Michael Cole pointed out that the winners of that match, the champions, will be responsible for defending the titles on all three brands, so Raw, SmackDown, and NXT.
Yeah.
And he made that clear. So we'll see kind of – I think my guess is we're going to see Ronda Rousey in NXT at some point, which will be interesting. But yeah, like, time will tell. But I think it hasn't been a good run so far, and tonight, you know, was more of the same. Joe, great topic. Back to you for something else.
Yeah, just a final point. I want to talk about Roman for a second, because I hear a lot of people talk about, oh, it's going to be special when he loses to whoever he loses to eventually. But remember one thing about that. WWE is not great at paying off. Remember The Undertaker's undefeated streak, 21-0, and he lost to Brock Lesnar. Now, there's no shame in losing to Brock Lesnar, but Brock Lesnar didn't need that loss. He was already the part-time millionaire champion. You know, it didn't make him a star. They just gave him the win. 10, 15 minutes would come back and watch that match. He thought he was going to spike the subscriptions. What I'm saying is, Vince doesn't, 50-year-old Vince McMahon booked ahead. 77-year-old Vince McMahon does not book ahead. He books day to day, and he changes his mind five times a day. So I don't think they have a plan for who's going to beat Roman, and I wouldn't be shocked if it's not a big deal when it happens, because when I say not a big deal, I don't mean that the 3 years come to an end. I mean that this guy is not going to be the next megastar, because that's not how they book anymore. They don't build stars. They still don't have any stars. Triple H has been in charge for a year. He has not created any new stars.
Joe, thank you. We will, I mean, Frank, like, your take. I'll just throw it to you. No, just open to you. What do you make of that? I mean, do you trust Triple H to pay this off?
I don't trust anybody in WWE, to be honest with you, okay? I don't trust anybody in American wrestling, okay? About the only booker I trust in this world is Ghetto, all right? But I'm willing to see what they do. As much as I make that statement, I think that they will make it a big deal, and I think it will be somebody that, you know, can be a, you know, a top act, whether it's as a heel or whether it's as a baby face. You know, does Roman turn baby face and lose to like a Gunther or something like that, you know, or is it Cody, you know? I mean, that's, you know, something that we'll talk about a lot in due time. So I think they do have something in mind. You know, I mean, when Joe mentioned that, I thought back to when Hulk Hogan lost the title, and he lost it to Andre the Giant after a 4-year run, but it was part of a major storyline. So, you know, they did parlay that into something, and I have a hard time believing they're going to waste a Roman loss of the world championship on, you know, nothing. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, Joe, I don't think, like, collectively, historically, you know, I don't know that WWE gets a, you know, the benefit of the doubt, you know, for turning these things into something. You know, the Undertaker thing, you know, we can debate that forever and ever and ever,
yeah.
And we will. But, you know, what I do think they get the benefit of the doubt at this point is, like, you know, the bloodline angle in general and Roman Reigns' title reign in general across the board has been well done, not only from a critical acclaim, but from business, too. I mean, it's increased their ratings, you know. I mean, and that we haven't seen that, you know, in pro wrestling in a long, long time. And Reigns as champion has carried that, and so has the story. And so, you know, I don't know if they'll pull it off. You know, there's, you know, if that's a conversation for a different day, like breaking down all the potential stars that are around to beat Roman Reigns. But, you know, I, at this point, you know, their ability to pay this off falls in a different category than other disappointments, just because they've done a good job here so far with Roman Reigns and his title reign. Joe, thanks. We're going to try to get some other callers here. Really appreciate the call and appreciate the topics.
Great job. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Joe. Have a good weekend.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye. All right, we'll go to Up next, 518. 518, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Strangely enough, it's another Joe from New York, Albany, New York, but Joe from New York nonetheless, with a completely different view than other Joe. In fact, I'm not even sure what other Joe was saying tonight, and I'm so glad that I was on after him because I was kind of chomping at the bit. Like, and I'm glad you – I think, Zach, right? I'm glad you just said what you said because
– Yeah. Hey, Joe, real quick, are you telling me that all Joes don't have the same opinion? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, apparently not. These Joes do not think alike at all.
Okay.
At all. Because I don't know how we can sit here, right, with the WWE has – and trust me, I'm 41. I've been watching since 8 years old. I have been critical in the past. But I don't know how we can sit here and say that we don't trust Triple. We're in the midst of one of the best storylines we've had in forever. Like, this is what we've all been waiting for, that we've been getting week after week. This has been going on for like 3 years, really kind of kicked into high gear in the last year or two with, you know, when Sammy came on board and things started heating up. So I'm just not clear what he means when he says, you know, don't trust the WWE to handle the story. We haven't seen them do this great in a long time. And I think that what you just said is spot on. It's reflected in the people that are watching, in the sold out arenas, in, you know, wrestling fans like me who've been kind of detached in and out throughout the years. I've watched, you know, throughout, but there have definitely been times where I've thought about jumping ship. I think that they're doing great, you know, and I think that I would put this Bloodline storyline up against any at this point. Obviously, you know, this week, I think, you know, they took their foot off the gas a little bit. That's to be understood. We're coming off of a blockbuster week, you know, so I'm not super surprised that it's not, you know, pedal to the metal again this week. You know, their pay-per-views next week, wrestling's 52 weeks a year. So I wouldn't go as far as to say that today sucked at all. In terms of the – and, like, I think Wade brought this up last week. I think I heard it brought up on the whole Jey Uso thing and, you know, needing an answer to a question as to why Jey Uso snapped at Jimmy last week when he found out that Jimmy wasn't in favor of him being the right-hand man. I mean, I don't think any explanation is necessary, and here's why. Like, first off, I mean, it's a TV show. So, like, any other TV show in the existence of TV shows, they make you think one thing's going to happen, and then something else happens. That happens in every TV show we watch. And wrestling, it probably happens more in wrestling. So that's, I mean, there's that. But with all that said, like, it's totally consistent with Jay's character. Jey Uso is a conflicted character. He's like a tortured soul, right? We've seen it as it's played out. It is not uncommon at all for him to feel one way one minute and then feel a totally different way the next minute. We saw it with Sammy when he embraced Sammy, and then Sammy turned on what he perceived as, turned on the Bloodline and betrayed him and the family. But yet, for months later, we see them in hallways smiling at each other. You know what I'm saying? Is Jay's character. So I don't think it's weird, if we want to be logical about it, in that segment last week for him to be like, you said that? You know, you really said you think that? But to realize that he's much better with his twin than with his manipulative cousin. So I would say, like, I don't understand that critique and that constant, like, because I've heard that a lot. And so I guess I've been babbling. So because other Joe got me all riled up. And so I guess I will just pause there and let you guys assess what I just said.
Frank, are you buying what Joe's selling on that one?
I mean, I think Joe brings up fair points. I mean, you know, Jay, especially at the end where he said he realized he's better with his brother than he is with his cousin. I mean, I think there's fairness to that. And he has been kind of unpredictable over the last few months. So that's, you know, that's fair. But what I will say is, you know, just because it happens on TV and just, you know, on TV shows, just because it happens in wrestling doesn't mean that, you know, we don't want to know you know, or we don't want to understand what happened, because basically, you know, they just went to a swerve last week. You know, they had this really good story that Roman was telling about Jimmy holding Jay back all those years. And, you know, Jay learning this was obviously frustrated, you know. So I think they could have done a better job addressing that tonight rather than going with, you know, a generic, oh, you know, you disrespected us, you know, our family's built on respect and things like that. You know, I don't think it's unfair to want a little bit more, as, you know, Zach, you and I talked about at the outset. What I also said is that, you know, there are plenty of fans like Joe, this Joe, not previous Joe, this Joe. there are plenty of fans that it doesn't matter to, because, you know, you got a great moment last week.
No, it's not that it doesn't matter. I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt. It's not that it doesn't matter. What I'm saying is that I don't see the hole in the storyline that you guys are seeing, I guess. You know, because in the Bloodline, Jey Uso is my favorite character in the Bloodline. We all love the Tribal Chief, right? But what I'm saying is not that it doesn't matter. What I'm saying is that I think that is consistent with Jey Uso's character. I think we see Jey Uso fly off the handle and then come back from that. And I think we've seen that. And I think that even with his facial reactions to things, we see the conflictedness, if that's a word, on his face all the time. So I just wanted to correct that, because I'm not one of those fans. I'm all about the logic, and I'm not one of those fans that thinks, oh, it doesn't matter, whatever, it's a swerve, it was cool, it was awesome. No. I mean, it was cool and it was awesome, but I just don't see the gaping hole that some other fans see in that.
So I think hole is probably the wrong way to describe it. If I'm going to go down that road, though, the hole for me is why, after Jay heard that Jimmy was kind of undermining him as far as that, like, his promotion in the Bloodline went, and he was doing that behind his brother's back, like, what would possess Jay in that moment, flying off the handle or not, to side with Jimmy over Roman? You know, I mean, that I think is like the quote unquote hole for me. But more so than that, I think you make some good points about Jay's character being like kind of like this lost soul and somebody who doesn't, you know, is you know, has been kind of all over the place in terms of where his allegiances lie. I think that's a good. Yes, right. I think more so than it being a hole in the story, it's just, for me, like, money left on the table in terms of making tonight a good and effective promo. Like, they had all that material to go with to make the promo seem more personal, you know, like, layer the family dynamic together between Jimmy and Jay. You know, you had that storyline piece to use, and they, you know, chose not to use it. So instead of having this promo that had a few layers in it and had a little depth, it was pretty just much one note. Hey, Roman, you disrespected us, and now we're going to beat you
I can agree with that. There's nothing wrong with it.
It was just,
yeah, I can agree yeah, with yeah. that. Like, see, so that, I think that is a discussion kind of, that I can totally. That's a discussion I can totally get on board with. Right? Is the, like, instead of saying it sucked, sure, he could have said, Jay could have said something like, and you know what? Like, I didn't like hearing what I heard last week, you know, because we've had this happening since we were kids. But I trust you more than I trust him. That's all he needed to say. You know what I mean? And because that's exactly what I got out of it. So I agree with you on that. It's just kind of, and it's not just on this show. I just, you know how it is. You see on the socials and stuff, just people going in on that. And I'm just like, really? Like, we're in the midst of, like, some of the best stuff we've seen, you know? So it gets somebody. I'll be quick with this last thing. Thanks for weighing in on that. Other Joe, riling me up. We talked about Ronda. I understand. I actually agree with Other Joe a little bit on Ronda and Shayna. With that said, you know, it was nice to live back. I don't think she and Raquel, and this, I'll end with this and just get you guys' take on this. I don't think Shayna and Ronda are the best. I think we should give them a little more time to kind of truly like kind of legitimize those titles. And perhaps, I don't know, see Raquel turn on Liv when they lose, you know, because I don't know about you guys, and you can let me know, but I don't really – this Raquel's kind of just smiling and showing her back thing. It's I don't know. It's not really doing it for me. I feel like she's one of those characters that could probably – wasn't she a heel in NXT? Like, I feel like she could probably – be a little bit better on that side of the fence. What do you guys think about that?
Go ahead, Frank.
Sorry, I'm sorry, Joe. Repeat the – I was just distracted for a second. Repeat the question again about Shayna and Ronda.
No, I think that – I don't think that – I was saying that I don't think that Liv and Raquel Rodriguez there should defeat Ronda and Shayna for the women's title.
Right.
The tag team championship.
Correct.
I think that instead – Ronda, they should keep it on Ronda and Shayna for a good period of time. Build it up a little bit, you know, legitimize the titles, and then perhaps have Raquel turn on Liv somewhere down the line, and then we have, you know, kind of David Goliath type thing, you know, little Liv against big, mean Raquel.
Gotcha. I apologize for making you repeat that. No, I agree with you. I'd like to see Ronda and Shayna hold the titles for a little bit. I don't want to see Raquel and Liv win it back. I want somebody to please establish these titles and make them mean something. I mean, I have been waiting for years, for 5 years, for somebody to make these championships actually matter. And dare I say, Ronda and Shayna could be those women, you know, especially if it's going to be, if they're going to defend it across three brands, you know, they can go to NXT. You saw the NXT viewership this week go up with Seth going there. So, you know, they could go there and they could go to Raw as well. And, you know, yeah, I think they would be, you know, they would be good, you know, holders of that for a little while. But I want to hear from them. I want to hear, you know, it doesn't have to be in-ring promos. That's probably not their strength. Do backstage stuff. Do sit-down interviews. Do something.
Right.
You know, tell me what those titles mean to you and talk crap about your opponents, why you think you're better than them. And they can do it. Ronda and Shayna can do it.
Yeah. They can be the face of this division, I think. Like, but it really, like, is on the book. Like, it's on Paul Levesque or Vince McMahon or who you know, whoever it is, they have to want to make something of this, because it doesn't really matter who the champions are. If unification matches are not going to get the time of day, you know, it's just not going to matter. Can they be something for the women's tag division? Absolutely. But, you know, I need to see the attention first paid to it. And I'm absolutely with both you guys that, yeah, Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez should not be winning the women's tag titles right now. I mean, like, that is, I think, a step backwards. And even though it's a good story, like, in the moment for one night, you know, I think you need to build teams here, build teams up. I mean, you've got Katana Chance and Caden Carter on Raw. You've got tag teams down in NXT. Like, there's a lot that needs to be done to get that division in a position where a team is ready to beat these guys. And so if it's me, you know, I'm putting Shayna and Ronda on a long run with the titles here. And, and then, you know, getting another team ready to go, you know, and hopefully, you know, turn the division into something. But, you know, we'll have to see. But yeah, no, this shouldn't be a hot shot type thing where Raquel and Liv get those belts back. I think there's, like, the upside of the division is with the titles on Ronda and Shayna. Joel, thank you. Appreciate the call. Anything
else? Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. No, just the, you know, Pretty Deadly is pretty awesome. So Joe's wrong on that too. But I'm out of time. I gotta go. But thank you guys. I I'm kidding. Obviously, everybody's entitled to their opinion. But I'm a huge Pretty Deadly fan. I think they're committed to the gimmick, and I think they do it well. And I I don't know. I wouldn't even be totally upset if they won the titles next week. But with that, I will say goodbye, and thanks, guys, for taking my call.
Thanks for making it, Joel. Call again. We'll talk soon. Have a good weekend. All right. Let's see. Who is up next here? 815. Thanks for holding. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Yes, hello. Yes, this is Spencer from Joliet, Illinois.
Spencer, good to hear from you. What did you think of SmackDown tonight?
First, I just want to say that last Joe, he's my spirit animal. I'm in sync with him. So yes, kudos to that last Joe. But I want
Spencer,
to.
Spencer, is your middle name Joe by any chance?
I checked my birth certificate earlier, and it is not. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
By the way,
I had to make sure.
On here, we had the first two callers were from New York, so the first two callers are from where the co-host is, and now we have a caller from where the host is in Illinois. How about that?
Wild.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah. Just a smooth 35, 40 minutes away from the city. So, but I wanted to switch it up, and I wanted to talk about the whole the Charlotte, Asuka, Bianca Belair situation, and I just don't understand how Charlotte is a babyface, because I find her just utterly, utterly annoying, and I just think that I don't know if they're gonna turn Bianca or not, but how is she not she's the most sympathetic in this whole situation. I mean, what she said tonight when she came and talked to Adam Pearce, and Adam Pearce said, you know, we're gonna have to bar you from ringside, you know, because if one of them, you know, wants to get physical with you, you know, we know that you're gonna want to retaliate, you know, defend yourself. And just trust me, you're going to get the title shot. You know, you're going to be able to call out whoever after, you know, whoever wins the match for next week. And Bianca said something, you know, it was kind of like a mic drop moment, because he had nothing he could say, because Adam Pearce was like, you know, just trust me on this. And then she said, trust you like I was supposed to trust you the last time. And then I got leapfrogged when you said that I was going to, you know, get a title shot, and Charlotte jump the line. So how is she supposed to be a babyface when, you know, her fault or not, she jumped the line, is going to fight Asuka. And Asuka is basically just, you know, she's just a person holding the belt. The story is not about her at all. Like, she's basically just holding the belt until either one of them get the belt back. So it diminishes Asuka too, and it's like, why should I even care about Charlotte? Because with Charlotte, it's the same story every time. It's come back and fight for the title. And people had a problem when Brock Lesnar was always fighting for the title, and that was his only story. And it seems like that is Charlotte's only story. And I get it, because, you know, they want her to get, you know, 15 and 16 and then eventually 17. But can we tell some other story besides she gets the title, she holds it for a couple months, she loses it, she's gone for 3, 4, 5 months, comes back, hey, I cash in my Charlotte in the Bank, because that's pretty much what it is. I cash in my Charlotte in the Bank, I get a title shot. I get a title shot. I know you haven't seen me in months. I get a title shot. Don't ask no questions. Don't worry about it. And I win the title. And now it's just the same story every time. And it's just like, and don't get me wrong, Charlotte, she's a great wrestler, but it's the same. It's one note. It's one note every time. It frustrates me. And then it puts me to the point where it's like, Bianca had a long reign, and I had no problem with her losing the title, because she was a champion for over a year, you know, the longest reigning in the modern era, whatever that means. And But it's like, you're making me now, I just want to see it back on her, because to me this makes no sense. It makes no sense at all. And like, I don't know, I can keep going, but what do you guys think about that that whole situation?
So a lot to unpack there. A lot to unpack there. Really good topic. Frank, I mean, fundamentally, I agree on Charlotte Flair. I mean, she's at the point where I think she's a lot like, she's a lot like Randy Orton in terms of being somebody that has just a natural charisma that aligns heel, but, you know, is kind of saddled with being a legacy star in WWE that people want to see. And so that can be really in conflict at times. And we saw it with Randy, you know, we see it with Charlotte. What they have going on here with Charlotte and Bianca and Asuka is on the verge, I think, Frank, of being pretty messy. You know, I don't know that it's like fully there yet, because, you know, I think you're still going to get a good match out of Asuka and Charlotte next week. You know, Bianca Belair is certainly going to be involved in some way, but, you know, like Bianca, I think has like the leg to stand on here in her argument with Adam Pearce. And I think it's making her, you know, significantly more likable than Charlotte Flair, which is fine if the match you're building to is Belair against Charlotte, babyface Belair, heel Charlotte. But with Charlotte coming back as a babyface and Asuka, you know, playing the heel opposite babyface Charlotte in this match next week, it's all very convoluted. And like I said, hanging on by a thread, it's tough to see at this point, Spencer, where this is going at this point. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we get some kind of, you know, shenanigan finish on Friday and, you know, a triple threat on Saturday. Like, I think that's absolutely in the cards, you know, Bianca versus Asuka versus Charlotte. I think that has potential. And then, of course, I think you're ultimately building to something very big between Bianca and Charlotte. But boy, it hasn't been an easy road to get there. Frank, what'd you think tonight? And what do you think of the women's title scene on SmackDown from a high level view?
Yeah, you pretty much read my mind, because I was thinking some kind of triple threat as well. I was thinking more for SummerSlam, though. They could do something.
That works, too.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit of a ways off. I don't remember off the top of my head when SummerSlam is. I mean, they could very well do something next Friday and then shoehorn a match. But, you know, if you're going to do a triple threat match, especially with those women, I don't know that you want to shoehorn that in, you know, especially when you have so much other stuff going on at Money in the Bank. It'll kind of just get lost in the sauce. So, I almost feel like they're a little noncommittal with Charlotte and Bianca. And when I say that maybe they want to turn Bianca heel, but they're not sure because of the reaction. I mean, I think last week she got a pretty favorable reaction as opposed to the reaction that she got in Puerto Rico. So it's kind of like, I don't know. I think they're trying to feel it out week by week and see, you know, where exactly they want everybody, you know, and then, you know, and then they'll make their decision, you know, as to which way they're going to go with Bianca. Are they going to turn Bianca heel? But then you got to keep Charlotte babyface. I don't like that at all. You know, like,
yeah, I just don't know how long it can last. Like, even if you just wanted to do it, it just, it's already hanging on by a thread. And really,
I think they like Charlotte as a face when she comes back, because she'll get that pop, you know, and everybody gets that pop when they come back. So I guess they figure that, you know, she can get away with it when she comes back, and then they'll move her where they need her. You know, they'll position her when they, and Randy Orton is a good comparison. Randy Orton is a really good comparison, because how many times did that guy turn through the years? You know, I mean, between Orton, between Big Show, you go back to Lex Luger, and you know, Kurt Angle turned a lot too. You know, I mean, she's definitely She's definitely in that territory. But I think they're trying to just position them, and they'll go week by week, and then they'll, you know, when they have their, when they kind of know where the crowd is with everybody, you know, then that's where they'll go where they want to go.
That the crowd would boo Charlotte and cheer Bianca? Because I think that they would. And, you know, Frank, you just mentioned it. You just alluded to it last week. I mean, to me, it wasn't like when Bianca came out there, you know, she got a favorable response. Like, I think that the crowd would cheer Bianca over Charlotte, because I think the crowd, like, I think they like to woo with her. She is a big star, so, you know, they're always going to react to her. But I think if her and the company both dug in their heels like they do with so many other people and say, you're going to be a heel, we don't care if we get the woos and stuff, but you're going to be a heel, I think that they would go along with it, because she is a great heel. She walks around like a heel. Her attitude is a heel. So I think that if they dug their heels, they could do it.
And Charlotte has acted like a heel since she's came back. I mean, her promos have screamed heel. So, you know, I'm just mentioning Bianca because I know there was talk of her turning heel, but, I think the money is in Bianca. Forget the triple threat. I think the money is in Bianca versus Charlotte one-on-one. I think that's where the money is.
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
and the money
and Bianca could chase
and the money is at Summer and that's at SummerSlam. I mean, forget the triple threat. I mean, if you want to ask me what I want, okay, give me the one-on-one between the two of them and let the crowd naturally react the way they're going to react. Like you just said, they're going to cheer Bianca. They're going to boo Charlotte. So just do it that way. If you go the other way, that's going to be a mess.
Not just tonight. I mean, I agree for sure. I hope I made that clear. Bianca Belair will get cheered over Charlotte, regardless of how kind of they're written. And that's why I think it's imperative to if you're going to go to that match, like you gotta make Charlotte a heel. I mean, and you guys hit the nail on the head. I mean, she did like the work that she did out there tonight. I mean, like, you don't want to change when you're a babyface or a heel. You don't want to change like everything about you as a personality. I think when I think of that, I think Sammy Guevara in AEW. Like the guy he tries to be this babyface and just can't pull it off, because I think he loses a lot of his arrogance and attitude and edge when he tries to play the part of a babyface. You have to have some similarities, and you can't lose your constitution as a character, but you can't just, you know, forget the fact that you're trying to get cheered. And it seems like Charlotte just has is either unaware or doesn't care that that's her job out there is to be cheered. I mean, it makes it, exactly. And she makes it really difficult for any heel that's going to work with her, because she's so darn unlikable that it's going to be hard for, you know, Asuka to get some strong heat on Charlotte when she acts the way that she does. And so she has a responsibility there to play the babyface role better than she does, if that's how she's going to be framed. And as I said, I don't know whether she's aware of it or not, or just doesn't care, but either way, you know, tonight was not a good night for her in that regard, if you're judging her on how successful she was as a babyface. Spencer, going to throw it back to you for a final point here, and we have some other callers we want to get to as well.
Okay, yeah. So final point is the whole – I noticed that, you know, there was no Austin Theory on the show, and he's been U.S. champion. And then I was watching the Street Profit match, and I think that you know, they could kill two birds with one stone here. The Street Profits, they're cold as a tag team. They're stuck in a rut. They lose every week. They're pretty much like an enhancement tag team. And to me, Austin Theory hasn't been anything since that John Cena match. I think that it's time to I'll PG it up. Leave or get off the pot with, you know, like with the Montez Ford, like single push and stuff. I think that they should make Montez Ford have him in a feud with Austin Theory and have him take that title off Austin Theory and see what you have in Montez Ford. Austin Theory is young enough. He has plenty of time to come back around. You know, this is not, let's just give up on Austin Theory. You know, it's none of that. He's like 25, 26 years old. He has plenty of time. Montez Ford is already, you know, in his early 30s. Like I said, the tag team is struggling. They're ice cold. Let's put him in a single feud. I'm not saying that he has to break up with Dawkins. It doesn't have to be your, you know, oh, he turns heel on Dawkins or Dawkins turns on him. It doesn't even have to be any of that. It could just be an amicable split. They can still tag team, you know, here and there. But let's get Montez Ford going because he has the charisma. He's a good wrestler. He even bulked up his body, to get it ready, you know, maybe for a singles push. Let's get him in the ring with Austin Theory. Let's have him take the title of Austin Theory. And guess what? Hey, if he doesn't work out as a single star, you can at least say you try. But you'll never know until you try. And that's all I got to say, guys. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I'll hang up and hear your response to that.
Thanks very much, Spencer. Great call. Good to hear from you and have a good weekend. Yeah, Frank, I mean, Austin Theory has just lost a ton of momentum, you know, since, you know, some really, really since WrestleMania, which is odd because you had such a big, I suppose, moment on paper there with him and with John Cena and getting that win. Like that, I think, by design was supposed to be a launching pad for him.
Right.
But man, I mean, it's been anything but. I mean, he is ice cold, and like, I don't think he's doing anything for that title. I don't think the title is doing anything for him at this point. I like the idea of Montez Ford as a singles act, or, you know, the attempt to see what he has as a single star. I think that, yeah, you need tag teams, but you know, are you going to do Street Profits against like are Street Profits and Pretty Deadly going to have like these just do great business for WWE? At this point, I don't think so. I mean, I think Street Profits have been there, done that in the tag division, and could use a little freshening up. I don't want to see a breakup between the two of them. You know, it's kind of like a, you know, amicably go your separate ways kind of thing. But I, when posed with that scenario of, all right, Austin Theory's cold, you know, they've been kind of teasing the idea of doing something with Montez Ford as a single star. His tag team is cold as well. Are you in favor of pulling the trigger on that title change, or does Austin Theory really need that belt to be relevant?
Well, Austin Theory needs work because the feud with John Cena absolutely murdered him. I was afraid of what was going to happen after that promo between he and Cena in the run-up to WrestleMania, and it just absolutely torpedoed him, and he has not recovered since. And I think a lot of that also has to do with how he wins matches. I mean, I can't remember the last time he won a meaningful match, meaning like a title match or whatever. I can't remember when he didn't win it without shenanigans. You know, and everybody like, well, he's a heel, Frank. He's a heel. Okay, but heels need to win clean too, okay? And, you know, it does put them over, you know, as I talked about earlier, you know, nobody gets over when you're just constantly doing crap finishes and shenanigans and things like that. So that's Austin Theory. As far as Montez Ford, I am in favor of that, but, you know, I don't want to see it just hot-shotted one week. I don't want to see him just, you know, pulled and then, you know, hey, you know, you've got this great opportunity and, you know, he goes out and he wins. I want to see build-up to it. I want to see promos. I want to see, you know, what it would mean to him to be the United States champion. I mean, if you want to do that, you could get to work now on it, you know, and you could build that up for SummerSlam. You know, I mean, there's another match right there, you know, Montez against Austin Theory. But, you know, I want to see build and I want to see them get to a point where Montez winning that title would actually mean something, you know. And to do that, you've got to get Theory some wins, too. You got to do some work on Austin Theory because beating him right now just means a pile of nothing, you know. So, you know, there's work to do on both ends if you want to make that happen.
Yeah, that's really well said. Really well said. I think you're right. you know, you can't just flip it. Like, you got to make it matter, or else, you know, you could end up in a similar spot with Montez Ford. So very shrewd of you to call that out. All right. 914, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from tonight. Thanks for holding.
Hey, Zach and Frank. It's Brad in Florida. How are you?
Good, Brad. Good to hear from you. What would you make of the SmackDown happenings tonight?
Yeah, I think this is the best show in all of pro wrestling, but tonight just felt very, very, like, sort of, like, unimportant and just, like, almost like just a pass-through show getting to, obviously, what's going to be a major time in the company with Money in the Bank and everything, but it really just felt like almost like they could have skipped the show, honestly. Like, there was nothing. I mean, maybe you could say Liv returning is something that's relatively important for the women's division or whatever, but even the Usos segment, and I think they are so great, and I think they're so terrific, but it just didn't hit the mark for me. I don't know if it was that Roman was missing or what it was, but it just felt extremely unimportant. And one of my questions to you guys was, with next week, I mean, why are they starting the show at 3 p.m. Eastern time? To me, you know, this is a show you absolutely show on delay. Who cares if, you know, things could be spoiled in 4 or 5 hours with the delay or, you know, Twitter or whatever. I mean, do you guys think that that's kind of crazy that they're starting this at 3 p.m. on a Friday when a lot of people are commuting, coming home? I understand there's DVR. I understand you can watch things later, but it is weird to me.
Yeah, you know, I did not catch that. Frank did, and you're talking SmackDown, right?
SmackDown next Friday.
Is going to air afternoon. Wow, yeah, I did not catch that. Did you hear that, Frank?
So, Brad, you know, it's funny because I thought I heard the same thing, and I kind of like blinked my eyes, and I saw that they were talking about Money in the Bank starting at 3 o'clock. But I feel like what you said is actually correct because I thought I heard that as well. See if I can check it because they
no I
they
pro-
have
I promise you guys I'm 100% correct. I promise you guys.
Yeah, no, I'm not like I
yeah,
said.
Yeah, I don't
I,
think
I,
you are.
I'm
just saying, yeah.
Yeah, because then after I did my little double take, I saw Money in the Bank at 3 o'clock next Saturday. I'm like, oh, okay, they're probably talking about Money in the Bank, you know. So, but,
I mean, it's one thing to do it for the pay per views. I'm surprised that they're doing that for this event, especially or for SmackDown, especially, you know, considering, you know, it's part of the Fox deal, and it's surprising that they're going to air that. At two o'clock central or 3 Eastern, and that Fox is going with that. So I mean, yeah, interesting, really interesting. I don't really get it either because it's going to be a pretty stacked show. I mean, they're going to have Roman Reigns on there. They're going to have Charlotte versus Asuka for the title. So you know, it's going to be an important go home show. So that's an interesting strategy, and one that I'm kind of furrowing my brow at right now, going like, huh, that doesn't make a ton of sense. We'll see what they do.
Zach, let me just hop in real quick.
Yeah.
I'm on my Fios app for next week, and the show still shows 8 o'clock. It doesn't show 3 o'clock next week. So Cole might have screwed it up. Cole might have made a mistake because I now that I'm thinking about what you brought up, Brad, I remember Cole talking about it. Cole might have screwed up and said next week SmackDown airing at 3 o'clock. The graphic on TV was clearly Money in the Bank. So I'm seeing SmackDown at 8 p.m. next week on Fox. So I mean, unless they're going to make a change. I mean, you know, which would be pretty stupid, be honest with you. They aired at 3 o'clock. That's dumb.
No, they may make a change, but I mean, but yeah, I just for the like fulfilling like their contract with Fox. I mean, there's no way Fox wants that show airing at 3 Eastern on a Friday. The more plausible kind of thought that I have on this is that Michael Cole maybe did just mess that up, Brad. But we'll see. I mean, that would be quite the pivot. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens there, though.
And it's funny. I also just, as you guys are talking, I'm listening, but I looked it up on Twitter, and someone writes SmackDown at 3 p.m. Eastern next week, and someone writes it said special start time. Yes. So I don't know. Again, with all this emphasis, everyone talking about ratings. What was Collision's ratings? What was Dynamite's ratings? What was NXT with Seth? What is, like, I don't know if you get, you know, even half of what you normally get if you're airing that at 3 p.m., especially with, and I really do think it's going to be at 3 p.m. What do I know? I'm not 100% sure. Maybe they just end up making a decision to go to tapes. But on the Grayson Waller thing, I personally love this guy. I watched his entire career in NXT. I loved him, the heat he got from the crowd. He is so good in the ring. He is so, like, charismatic. He really makes you care about him. I hate what they're doing with him. I hate it. I think, first of all, he is a really sleazy, jerky heel, and that's what he is. And he does it really good. And even in these segments, like, there's nothing mean about him. There's nothing even rude about him. There's nothing like I'm just not seeing what I want to see. And to me, like, even when the Street Profits came out, he has this, like, surprised, almost happy look on his face. You know, maybe that's, oh, I enjoy confrontation. But in the same respect, like, he should hate a team like the Street Profits. Like, he's a jerk, and he shouldn't like the good guys coming in, you know, to interrupt. So I don't know what you guys think of what he's doing. I just think they have to get him in the ring, and then those Grayson Waller effect segments will mean more, and they will, you know, resonate more. I just don't like it, guys.
I'm so happy you brought this up, Brad, because I thought the exact same thing. I mean, they took a character in NXT, a Grayson Waller character that had, and we talked about layers earlier in the show when it came to Jey Uso and the promo, and I'll say the same thing here. I mean, Grayson Waller had layers to him. Yeah, he had the jerky, arrogant heel part of him, but he also had this ruthless, vicious side to his heel character too that played so well, you know, in matches, like in actually trying to win matches. And they've totally stripped him of that edge on the main roster. I mean, he is more one note than ever. I mean, he is like, you know, like, he's like the Miz now more than anything else. I mean, he is like Miz level heel. He's got his show, but the show is rarely about him. I mean, the Grayson Waller effect has existed thus far to further other feuds that the company has, whether it's women's division stuff or the tag team stuff this week. I mean, it just has not been about Grayson Waller. And Brad, I think you're right. I mean, he brings more to the table than that. And, like, I think the magic of Grayson Waller, you know, if he's going to realize, like, a full potential, or what you thought you saw in NXT, he has to have that edge about him. He has to have the element of, man, yeah, this guy is arrogant and this guy is annoying and he's a jerk, but he's also dangerous at the same time. And I think that they were able to walk that line in NXT, especially towards the end of his run. But they haven't even attempted to show it here, Frank. What do you think of Grayson Waller right now? And, you know, how does this compare to your feeling about him for whatever you saw of him in NXT?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'll stipulate to is maybe there's an injury we don't know about. I haven't heard anything. I don't know if you have, you know, so maybe that's what's going on. But, yeah, I mean, you could tell Vince has got more say, because when Vince, when he sees comedy in somebody and he sees that somebody does comedy well and can do like a talk show and stuff like that, he gets into that more than he gets into the wrestling. So I think there's a lot of him. I think there's a lot of his influence by having Grayson Waller do this more than getting in the ring. And it's just not, it's just not showing what he can do. I mean, I saw some of his work in NXT. I watched the major shows, you know, and I saw what he could do. And he could be that swarmy, slimy heel. We saw it in that, what was that match? The Iron Survivor match back in the winter, you know?
Yep.
You saw that side. So, yeah, I would like to see that. you know, mixed in with this television act, which I'm sorry to say, but the talk show act isn't even that great. Like, he's just not
right. I know
he's not hitting. You know, it's just there, and it's just there to facilitate whatever they're doing. And yeah, it's just not working for me, unfortunately.
Brad, back to you. Any thoughts?
Again, I love this guy, and like I know he could do more, and it's very frustrating. Like, look, if he even had one match, and again, like Frank Yuki said, maybe there's an injury that we don't know about. I have no idea, but that's the thing that Zach brought up that is bothering me the most, that there has been nothing even about him. The only thing that was about him was at the very first Grayson Waller effect, he brought up AJ Styles and said, you're going to lose, or and kind of stared him down. Everything else has been to further Asuka, to further Charlotte, to further Pretty Deadly, to further the Street Profits. It's really useless and terrible usage.
Yeah.
Really terrible. They need to shift gears on that very quickly, or people are going to think he's just a loser and he's not going to go anywhere. I don't know. But the Pretty Deadly thing, really quick, I really do think that I don't understand why every match needs to be for the undisputed tag team titles. If that's the case, then why do they have to carry around a blue and a red belt? Like, we did all these different belt changes. We had four of them, or three of them already, or four of them if you count Seth's new one. I mean, why can't we just give them one belt and end it? The Pretty Deadly match, to me, should be for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships, because that's the show the Pretty Deadly are on, you know, and to me, that should be the way they go with it. Do you think do you guys feel like there is a way to split these belts up, or you feel like it's just every match is for the Undisputed, both red and blue, and there's no separation ever? Because I don't even understand why they're carrying around two if every match is for both. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't. I don't even know that I want to go down this road there, Brad.
I know.
It's so.
I know.
It's just, I can't even give a good answer, because it's just like, what, you know, are they permanently, you know, unified titles? Are you going to split them at some point? I mean, it would seem to me now that if you have, like, okay, you've got two men's world champions, you've got two women's world champions, you've got, you know, two mid-card titles, and you have one set of undisputed women's tag team titles. Like, the outlier here is the men's tag division. So to me, like, the logical explanation would be call them, you know, undisputed tag titles, get you know, belts, you know, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, they defend on all three shows, just like the women will do now. Like, and so, yes, I mean, they got to fix the belt thing. I mean, it's a small thing. It's nothing that, like, I'm sure Paul Levesque is losing sleep over, but it's just like, it doesn't match up with everything else that's going on with the company. So, Brett, I don't have a good answer for you, but I'm with you in, like, wanting WWE to do something about this. And, hey, look, you can sell new belts, too. So, you know, there's a business reason to do it. Frank?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could think of is maybe they just don't know what they want to do, and that's why they haven't come up with one set of belts, because maybe they might want to go back to, you know, brand-exclusive tag team championships. I would not want to see that. I think one set of tag titles is enough.
Agreed.
So, yeah, it could be that they just don't know, or they just haven't designed the belts yet. And I don't know what's taking so long. I mean, you know, with all their money, they could come up with a belt. I mean, how long does it take to make a belt, right? What, a week or two? I don't know. But, you know.
If that, I mean, geez. They crank out the ones for the – you know, the, you know, sports team champions pretty darn quick.
Pretty quick,
Yeah, Brad, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sympathetic to your frustration, because it does look a little silly. You know, and I think it's better at this point for this the company and the shows to treat those champions as traveling champions. Like, it just, you know, because you don't have – You just don't have the depth for, like tag team titles on both shows at this point. I mean, like, who would, if Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, Frank, were just SmackDown tag team champions, you know, you've got Street Profits, you've got Pretty Deadly, you know, Usos, of course, but they're almost like above the titles at this point. It's like,
yeah,
in 3 months you could run through your like all of your potential feuds. I mean, you could burn that out really, really quick. Whereas right. if you have them as traveling champions, they could spend a little time on all these shows and have fresh matchups that keep the show fresh while giving, you know, Paul Levesque something to build around from a booking perspective. So it makes sense to go that direction of them. I don't know, Brad, why they didn't. Frank?
And you know they like to sling people around brands, so it's an excuse. It's an excuse
right.
for them to
yep.
do it. You know, like they could get, you know, different matches with Kevin and Sammy because, you know, they can move between shows. And, you know, the same thing with Ronda and Shayna. You know, they can move them around and things like that. So, yeah, it gives them an excuse to have those, you know, those fresh matches. And, you know, WWE doesn't like to have a lot of hard tag teams anyway. You know, they kind of like to keep the tag division open, you know, and keep it for guys that, you know, okay, we don't have a singles feud for you. We don't have something for you, but we'll put you guys together and make you a team. And hey, look, a lot of times that works, you know, worked for Riddle and Randy Orton for a while. So, you know, I think they like to have that flexibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brett, any final notes for us tonight?
I'll be super quick, but yeah, it's just like what they had Raquel doing tonight. Even their opponents, they get to sling them back and forth because Raquel is a Raw person and she's on SmackDown tonight. I don't really care about a hard brand split, but the last thing I'll say is just along those lines, just to follow up, is that it would create so much more intrigue. Like if Pretty Deadly was fighting only for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships tonight, next week, I would say, you know what? They might win this. And, you know, and Sammy and Kevin still keep the Raw ones. Like, I would say, you know, it would give me more suspense. I don't think they're winning both and just becoming undisputed. But if it was only for one, I would be like, well, maybe. You know what I mean? So, I don't know, guys. Have a good night. Thank you so much for the generosity with the time. And have a good evening. You guys are great.
Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Brad. Really appreciate it, man. Good stuff. Have a good weekend. All right, Frank, let's we'll pause our caller portion there, and let's grab an email here from Chris, and it's a interesting email, and I'll throw to you first on it right out of the gate. Chris says, I don't know if it's just me, but this SmackDown seems pretty uneventful. Pre-main events, I feel that there's nothing I'll remember from this SmackDown in the long run. Do you guys feel the same? It feels that Triple H knows that with Forbidden Door this weekend, he is almost giving AEW the weekend. Since next weekend will be theirs with Money in the Bank, am I onto something or missing something? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Frank, is Triple H keeping tabs of AEW on the calendar?
You mean that, what did he call him, snot-nose company? The pissant company. That's what it
is. Yes, right.
So I was trying to get the term right. It could very well be. I mean, it seems to be a theme tonight that, you know, the show was pretty skippable. And you know, it was not a show that I'm going to particularly remember. But at the same breath, I thought it was fine. I mean, not every show has to hit a home run. Not every show has to have 10 memorable moments. I mean, you can have those maintenance shows. You can have those, you know, move the chain shows as they do in football, right? You know, you move the ball 5 yards, you know, and it all counts. So, you know, you can have that every now and then. And I think the point about, you know, AEW having their weekend, you know, I think there's something to that. They know they have Roman next week. You know what I mean? So next week, SmackDown is going to be a pretty big deal. And they'll have the premium live event. So, yeah, I mean, it's perfectly fine to set it up that way. But, I think Chris's point is very well taken.
Yeah, I think your point about not every show is going to be this just burner of a show. I don't think they all can be. I mean, you have to have some shows out there to set up others. I mean, like, it's just like a drama on TV, you know, episodic drama. Like you're going to get shows that are the super memorable ones, and then you're going to get those filler episodes that are used to, you know, set those other shows up. And the same thing applies here too. And coming off last week, it was kind of next week being the go home SmackDown for Money in the Bank. Like this, you know, is a proper moment to take a breath as far as SmackDown goes. And so I don't knock them for that. Like, yeah, could they have done better things on the show this week? Absolutely. I thought the opening promo could be better. The women's tag, obviously, that had a lot of opportunity to be better. Like, the stuff that they did, I think, could have been improved. But I don't fault them for what they booked tonight, just because, you know, there's bigger things coming up. I don't know that Triple H is worried about giving AEW a weekend. I think this just kind of fell that way.
Right.
He'd probably rather not give them any weekend, but, you know, it's just the way things fell. And I think,
right.
I think that's, it's okay to have those shows.
But he might think that, you know, listen, everybody's going to be watching, you know, everybody's going to be watching Forbidden Door Sunday, and everybody's going to be watching Collision tomorrow, so I'm not going to worry about it. I got the London show next week. The London shows are always hot, you know, and I got Roman next week, so we'll save all the hot stuff. We'll save all the good stuff for, you know, for next week's episode. And the thing I want to say is, when you try to make every episode special, nothing is special, because then nothing stands out. You know, you can have those, you know, you come down a little bit, you know, and then you come back up, and you have those really, I mean, think of all of your favorite shows that you've watched through the years, you know, they have those great moments, and those shows stand out, you know, and,
yep.
you know, you just have a few maintenance deals in between. So, yeah.
Good stuff, Frank. Any other final points or notes that you want to hit on tonight's show before we shut it down here?
No, I think we pretty much got everything. The one thing that nobody brought up real quick is just LA Knight, and you know, I, to my point about clean finishes, he got a clean finish over Ray, and that's probably the match that I enjoyed the most. You know, because it was a guy that, you know, is getting a push, and, you know, his popularity is growing. So you give him a win over a legend, you know, and it didn't hurt Ray to lose. And, you know, LA Knight actually got something out of that. So it made me wonder about his chances going into Money in the Bank. See how that works, WWE, when you just do a clean finish, you know? So I thought he was really the one that gained the most tonight. You know, over everybody else. And it was interesting. He still kind of acted heelish after the match, and he is a heel, you know, right now. But I know his popularity is growing. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, where they're going to be with him in a year. Is he kind of on that Stone Cold or Rock trajectory where, you know, the crowd is just going to force him into a babyface role, and then we go from there. So,
I thought it was really interesting that he beat Ray clean like that. I mean, he's, you know, he's getting good responses from the audience. Like, I don't know that it's all heel responses. Like, it's not all negative. I mean, there's
right.
a strong kind of babyface pop in what happened tonight. But, like, the booking clearly is painting him as a heel. Is T on your short list of potential Money in the Bank winners?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I have LA Knight, but this Logan Paul thing is knocking at the door, man. I mean,
yep.
Forget knocking at the door. He's banging on the door, and he's kicking it too. I mean, I would not be surprised if they go Logan Paul. You know, just the fact that they added him, you know, he didn't have to qualify. There's a history with Seth Rollins, you know, like there's just so many pieces that line up that, you know, and he's slimy enough to hold that briefcase. It fits like a glove, you know, it really does.
Yeah.
So I'm between him and LA Knight. Those would be my two picks.
How long do you think WWE needs to, like, either wait or well, let me reframe. Have they missed the boat on pulling the trigger on LA Knight as a babyface? Like, when does LA Knight as this kind of up and coming grassroots babyface lose momentum because he keeps beating people like Rey Mysterio as a heel? Like, are they near that line yet, or can this still organically grow in a positive way for him?
No, I think it can grow. I think it could grow. Like, what's flashing in my head right now is Stone Cold 97, you know? I mean, it took a while. I mean, he was pretty much a babyface after WrestleMania 13, so, but he was still acting heelish, you know, as that year went on. But, you know, they got to where they needed to be with him. This whole, I'm trying to remember when this started, Zach, with LA Knight. Has this been like for about a month or so? Or I just can't remember the starting point where the reaction was really good for LA. Because I know he was dealing with Bray Wyatt earlier in the year, and that stunk to high heaven. But when did he start getting this really good reaction?
Oh, yeah, I think it's been about a month. I mean, I think, like, you saw, you know, the Bray Wyatt thing was not, like, a good like it never went anywhere. But I think what did come out of that, from a like pulling a positive from that on LA Knight's side of things, is you got to see him like work a microphone. You got to see him work a crowd, and you got to see kind of his charisma. And so like it didn't really fall into anything meaningful, but I think he got a lot of people to look at him differently, kind of helping to carry those promos and those segments, and I think it just kind of built from there. But it hasn't been very long. Like, it's only been, you know, maybe 6 weeks, maybe.
That's why I'm saying I'm not too worried about it. I mean, hey, you know what? There's your guy that could dethrone Austin Theory. There's your guy.
Yep. Mm-hmm,
you know,
absolutely.
you want to turn him baby face. I mean, there's your guy right there. There's your potential next U.S. champion. And you know, he's got the chops, you know, so he's got the ability to make winning that title mean something. And I think he and Theory can play off each other really well with their two personalities. So, you know, that could be something that wakes Theory up a little bit. So, I'd be curious about that.
Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, he's going to be a real interesting person to watch. I've said, you know, on this show a couple weeks ago on the YouTube show, that he's in a tough spot because there's not, like, you know, Seth is like the B world champion, but he's a babyface and he's on a roll right now too. And I don't know that you want like an LA Knight cash in on Seth. And at the same time, you don't want, I don't think that even as a babyface who's getting good reactions, like, I don't know that he's the guy that's going to, you know, declare his shot against Roman and beat him either. So he's kind of left in this like middle ground. But, you know, a program with Austin Theory, like, that is a good way, I think, to kind of like continue to fan the flames of LA Knight, but not overly push him either. That's a good call.
Yeah. And they got a small window with him too. I mean, he's 40. So whatever they're going to do with him, they got to do it quick because,
right.
You know, you only got about maybe 3 to 5 years, you know, so, but I think they'll get there. He fits WWE so well, you know, because he can talk, you know. You even heard tonight, you know, L.A. Knight, you know, you heard the crowd doing that. So he's in a perfect fit, and I think they'll run with it at some point. I'm not worried about it.
All right, Frank. Good stuff, man. Thanks for joining the show. One more time, plug Pro Wrestling Then and Now and talk about social media and how people can read your stuff on pwtorch.com.
Absolutely. So Pro Wrestling Then and Now, on the VIP side of things of the Torch, what I do is go back and look at old pay-per-views, usually a 20, 25, or 30-year look back. It depends, too. Sometimes I'll do a co-host choice or a viewer's choice episode. You've been on that show before. It's been a minute. I got to get you back on there at some point. But as I said, most recently I looked at King of the Ring 1998. I've got a few ideas of what I'm going to do over the summer, a couple of look backs. So look for that on social media. And speaking of social media, you could find me on Twitter at Frank Pettiani. That's at Frank, Pettiani. It's hit and miss. Whether I tweet a lot, usually I'm tweeting pictures of whatever I'm cooking, and I've had a lot of good stuff up lately. So, you know, if you want to get inspired, go ahead and look at my account. And speaking of hits and misses, I write the WWE Premium Live Event Hits and Misses Report, and you will find the next one coming up here for Money in the Bank a week from tomorrow. And Zach, it's always a pleasure to work with you. Always great to talk wrestling with you, just to talk to you in general. You know, I really appreciate you, having me on tonight to talk SmackDown.
Absolutely, man. Pleasure is all mine. Once again, you can catch Wade on the VIP side of things a little bit later, pwtorch.com/goVIP. With the Wade Keller Hotline, he'll be running down his thoughts on the show, as he does every day with the Wade Keller Hotline. You can check that out, as well as a multitude of other VIP podcasts, including Frank's, by giving a VIP membership a shot, pwtorch.com/goVIP. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn. You can read my work at pwtorch.com all week long. I've got receipt columns on all the major shows of the week, Raw, AEW Dynamite, usually NXT as well, and sometimes on SmackDown, just my, you know, news and notes and thoughts and analysis from all of those shows. You can also check me out on the PW Torch YouTube channel. Just search PW Torch on YouTube. We are live almost every day of the week, and we have our flagship YouTube show, The Fireside Chat, with myself and Tyler Sage on Friday afternoons, where we talk all the news of the week in wrestling, WWE, AEW, everything in between. We did a full kind of AEW collision analysis earlier today, and previewed this weekend's Forbidden Door event. So you can check us out on YouTube, subscribe, hit the notification button so you know that we are when we are live all throughout the week. Follow PW Torch on Twitter at PW Torch, and you can follow me on Twitter at ZHaydornTorch. Thanks so much to all of our callers. Thanks so much to all of our emailers. Thanks to our listeners. For Frank, I'm Zach, and we will catch you guys next time. See ya.